This is Shudders Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 253 of Shudders Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuddersIncPodcast.com, and joining me on the line via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Glyn Lavender. How are you?
Oh, I'm cold.
Oh, really?
Oh, I'm freezing.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Man, you guys have had the weirdest summer.
Oh, no, it's not cold. No, the weather's not cold.
Oh. Oh, why are you cold?
I'm naked.
Thank God this is not a video podcast. Why are you naked?
Well, I've been reading this post this week on musicians.
Right.
It turns out a lot of musicians, when they go in the recording studio...
Record naked.
Record naked.
Yeah.
Something about it helps the vocals. So here I am. I'm giving it a shot. Yeah. See if I sound any more dulcet. How you doing? But it's not easy to do when you're shivering, though, dude.
Imagine not.
So, well, let's see how, this is how the very first nude podcast goes.
Right. Excellent. Well, other than being nude, what have you been up to this week?
Oh, I've had a good week, actually. I had quite some fun taking photos.
Yeah?
We had another city walkthrough in Melbourne on Saturday with a bunch of people, which was lots of fun, and we did some different stuff.
Yeah.
And did a shot. I had this red carpet with me. I had this idea of doing a shot in a skanky alleyway.
Okay.
We had this model in this beautiful dress with a big, really quite high fashion look. And I sort of figured, if we get into a really skanky alleyway, and I had a red carpet, we put the red carpet in the alleyway, and she'd be walking down the red carpet in this horrible juxtaposed thing. Couldn't quite find the alley I wanted, but I did find a nice narrow walkway between two buildings.
Yep.
And put the red carpet out and got a sort of walking away from us kind of looked best.
Yeah.
And because it helped, with positioning of light. And then had the light on the other side of her sort of firing back and lighting up the wall and throwing shadows down the wall. And it was kind of cool. So, and because the dress we were wearing had, well, she was wearing, we weren't wearing it. it doesn't come in my size, I tried. it was a black dress with this massive red bow on it.
Yep.
And it's like a silky red bow, and she had elbow length silky red gloves on as well.
Yep.
And the red carpet being sort of red as well had this great sort of play of colours. So that was kind of a fun shot. I enjoyed doing.
Nice.
That. My favourite shot of the week.
Nice.
Other than I took a couple of photos of my daughter last night, so I have to say they were my favourite ones. And then me and my mate Dave Oakley went for a wander around the zoo again on Monday. It was
right
Tuesday.
Now, did Tuesday. He get his did he get his lens fixed?
So no, so I saw him. He's got the Sigma 120-500, I think it is. It's a whopping great big thing, and no, it just doesn't focus. But here's the thing: even the manual focus ring doesn't work.
Right. So has he not sent it back? I mean, this thing's brand new. It must still be under warranty.
Well, it is. So I took it. He's not the most capable of doing that sort of stuff by himself. Yeah. So I took it. We went into a local camera store here with people I knew and got it put in and sent off to hopefully get replace, because I hear this is not an uncommon fault on the internet, and a lot of people have had this issue have had it replaced. So a bit of luck. It's not a cheap lens. I think it's a $2,000 lens or something. So, you want to be looked after. He's only used it three times.
Yeah, right.
Three or four times. So no, we ended up sharing my 150-600.
Right.
And by sharing, meant he had it for 3 minutes. So I had it for the rest of the day. equal rights. And I also took the 90mm macro out and did some butterfly head shots.
Oh, nice.
Photographing butterflies. It just reminded me how much I hate macro.
Why?
It's a beast. You shoot an F16, F18.
And you move 2mm and you're all out of focus.
Exactly. And I've been having this argument with people have been coming to my workshops over the last 6 or 8 months or so, and a lot of them have said, I really enjoy macro photography. And my first question, of course, is why? I've got to say, if I was any good at it, I'd love it too. But I'm saying, so I'm talking to them about apertures, and they all like to shoot at f2.8.
What, for macro?
My exact exclamation, I said to myself, what the hell are you shooting? She goes, and they said, I just like the way it looks. And I says, what, F and the out of focus? Yeah, I like the look of everything out of focus. Yeah. I'm shooting f16. I've got
there were five atoms that were in focus.
I've got 2 mil depth of focus at f16, and they're shooting 2.8. I mean... back focus, I'd be focusing on the back of the hair. It's just, I don't. I just don't know how they're doing it. I just got a feeling they actually don't know what they're doing, and they don't actually know what aperture they're using, and they just make up ones. Because I mean, your percentage of shots at 2.8. I mean, when we're talking serious macro now, the object almost on the end of your lens, you have no depth of field at 2.8.
No,
And no real control. Yeah, if you've got even slightest movement in the scene.
You've
got no control about where that focus point is.
Nah, hopeless.
Unless you're shooting at 8 frames a second and hoping somewhere in that little waft that one of those things will be in focus. It's a test of patience to be shooting butterflies in a stinky hot, humid environment, because that's where they are at the butterfly house.
Yes.
And just try and get anything in focus is a test of not throwing your lens through the wall or something. Excuse me, Mr. Tamron, my lens seems to have a dent in it. How'd that happen? I threw it at a wall. Yes.
My earliest attempts at macro were of shooting flowers. And I always found that even on the stillest of days, the flowers still wiggle a lot. It doesn't take much of a breeze at all for flowers
even your breath.
Yeah.
So I started the same way as you, and then I found it much easier to shoot flower rather than flowers. Just a little pile of white powder, self-raising, maybe a bit of plain every now and then for variety. Wholemeal. Yeah. And that stuff doesn't move, unless it's windy. Of course, when it blows, it gets crazy. But, and the worst thing is when it blows dead right in your eyes when you're trying to shoot.
Yeah. When you snort it up your nose. Yeah.
That macro stuff is seriously hard. I mean, but I do love it. I mean, I love the world from that perspective because you don't see it that way. But, I love doing stuff that's not easy for me because it's more challenging as much as it frustrates me. But it just gives you the sheer appreciation of when you see this amazing stuff that people have shot. It's like, wow, you've got it going on.
Yeah.
If you can do that sort of stuff consistently that well, that's just you've really nailed a technique that works.
Yeah.
And, all power to them, I say.
Yeah. Now, funny that you should mention, people finding their niche.
Yeah.
Because during the week...
I haven't finished yet.
I had a great segue there, and now you just spoiled it.
I had one more little thing about the zoo. The week before when I went to the zoo, I shot this baboony kind of thing with this incredible, beautiful coloured face and everything else.
Yep.
Beautiful green out of focus bouquet in the background, and it was a gorgeous shot.
Yeah.
If I say so myself. Well, this week he was not cooperating. He was hiding in this little bit of a cave.
Right. Yeah.
But with his back to everybody.
Right.
Yeah. But there's this spot of sunlight on his shoulder blades just sitting there. This beautiful little round, it was probably an 8-inch by 8-inch little spot of sunlight. It was slowly moving up from his back up to his shoulder blades.
Right.
So I sat there, me and David, we sat there, and we sat there, and we sat there. And this other monkey walked past, and just as it was at just the right height, this baboon, monkey baboon, whatever it is, it turned around.
And his face came in the light. His face
was lit into this thing. He looked up, his eyes got lit by the light for 0.2 of a second, then he turned around and went back again.
Yeah. And did you get the shot?
Nailed it.
Nice.
Because I've got this thing, I'm shooting manual, I had all my exposure set, I was ready to go. I was just, it's that chasing serendipity I talk about all the time. Okay, we're in the position, there's the potential for something to happen, let's wait and see if it does. We don't need to wander around the zoo and take 300 shots.
No.
Let's sit here and see if we can get one great one.
Yep.
And there we've got this black scene. This scene's all black, with the exception of this incredibly colourful snout and these yellow eyes.
Awesome.
And just the fur about his neck and his head is lit up as well. And it's gorgeous,
Nice.
Yeah, once again, it's shot at 960mm through 3 inches of perspex. So it's and dirty perspex at that, because people tap on the glass or tap on the windows all the time. Sharpness is tempered by what you're working with. But just fantastic. So that was another great lesson in being patient, which I'm not often able to do. But how much I appreciate when I actually do it. I can never do it at a workshop. I can never
take a
workshop. So, actually getting out there and shooting for yourself is pretty good. So, I heard you went on one of those little motorized little like two wheel little bike things this week.
Yeah,
you stand up on them and you sort of where your body sort of angles, it changes direction and speed and stuff.
A motorcycle?
No, Segway, dude. I'm trying to get back to the Segway. You said you had this great segue to the next bit.
You clown. So anyway, talking about people who have found their niche,
yes,
as we were 5 minutes ago, Carl Hemmings posted a link up on the Shutter Zinc page on Facebook.
He did.
To a photographer by the name of, let me find it.
Noel
Kearns, K-E-R-N-S.
Kearney.
Say again?
Kearney, to his mates.
Yes, that's right. Noel Kearns. This guy has absolutely, well, in my opinion, nailed the whole nighttime light painting, long exposure look, combined with urban decay. I went and had a look at the site after I saw Carl had posted the link, and I was there for an hour. Just looking at these images, this guy is just fantastic. I mean, I don't know whereabouts in the US he is. I'm guessing it's California, but he just seems to have this unending supply of old roadhouses and decrepit buildings beside freeways, and his catalog of work was just, to my mind, gorgeous. Have you had a look at any of it?
Yeah, I did. I did, and didn't think much of it at all.
Is that right?
Isn't it funny how people see stuff differently?
Yeah,
it's just like some of his shots are very good. Overall, body of work left me a little uninspired.
Okay, because of
that, just all seem a bit flat.
Because it all looks the same, or
no? There's not enough life. It's funny enough, we're talking about places that are completely empty. They all just seem a bit dull and a bit
not enough people in them for you. That's what it is.
Where's all the people at? it's just, I don't know. It's exactly the sort of stuff I should like,
right?
You know, I just don't.
Yeah, okay. You
know, I don't know whether this is the colours he chooses to use. It's just, to me, that's just, if you compare that to the stuff like compared to what what's his name from American Pride and Passion
Eric Curry, was it?
Of course, our mate Eric. We should know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, yeah. But that's
look. I did a couple of times. Did think that in some of Noel's shots it was colour for the sake of colour in terms of his use of gels.
Mm.
But I applaud the guy for having, like I said, he's found a niche, and I think he addresses that niche really well. Hey, as you said, it's subjective. It's not everyone's cup of tea. You weren't blown away by it. But
not everyone likes it either, though.
Yeah.
It's not just subjective.
Nothing.
so that's kind of the bizarre thing, you know. So it's exactly the stuff I should like. Yeah.
Why do you say that?
Well, because I mean, I love rotten, ruined, falling down places.
Yeah, yeah, same.
Yeah, that's my kind of places I'd like to be shooting.
Yep.
It just doesn't grab me, and I don't know why. I mean, I think half of it is the maybe it's the use of colour for colour. So he does use a lot of colour, but if you look at it as in pieces of art, I don't know. It's just maybe the colour palettes are wrong. The weird thing is I use a lot of those colours. I love me reds and me blues and me greens, because they're the boldest colours to stand out on stuff.
Yeah.
So I just don't know. It's hard. Yeah. Most of the stuff I just find a little flat, especially the outdoor stuff, looking at the external. The internals of the buildings are easier to work with, obviously.
Yeah.
But the externals just seem a little,
Okay. Oh, well.
Very,
each to their own.
Exactly. You like it. Yeah. I like it. I'm sure stacks of other, but isn't that, I don't know much about art, but I know what I like.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, you can, but it's great to be challenged by stuff like that because, you know, I don't know. I don't really know why I don't like it.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's interesting because I know I should like it.
Yeah.
I should. I'm not saying this is a quote. Some of the images there I do like.
Yeah.
I can only talk about as an entire body of work. It's like,
fair enough.
But it's odd. But Carl, thanks for sending it in.
Absolutely.
It's great to see and great to see what the. And I'm going, oh, where's that? I'd love to shoot that place. I'd love to shoot that place.
Oh, some of the locations he had were just beautiful.
Just amazing, aren't they?
The one that really blew me away was the Baker Hotel. Did you look at that set?
No, I may have flicked past it, not yet. I don't look at titles and stuff, so I
know. Well, when you go to his homepage, there's like six different galleries of work, and one of them was entirely devoted to this one particular hotel. And I didn't see any mention of what city it was in, but were we talking about Chicago the other week where there's like...
Detroit.
Was it? Where there was like 90,000 decrepit buildings? Maybe it was there. But this thing's like a, you know, 16... like a 16-story hotel in the middle of a city and the whole hotel is still there but just complete urban decay. And, you know, and he'd obviously climbed right up to the top floor and, you know, set up off-camera flash and done this cityscape from the top floor of this decrepit hotel. It was, like, amazing.
I think I've slept in some of those rooms. When you travel on a budget, I'm pretty sure, there we are, room 307. Yeah. That does look very familiar. Right? Of course, it wasn't as clean when I was in it as the Harry Lee shop. He's obviously fixed the place up a bit.
they fixed it up for the photo shoot.
Yeah, pretty much. Clean up some of the crap I left behind, there's a funny one there, the personal sauna where he's in the shot himself.
Oh, that's right. Just his head sticking out, yeah.
That's classic. That is classic. Very funny.
Yeah.
Look.
And Carl followed up with an email to say, just to bring it to everybody's attention, you probably know about this free magazine called F11. So I just thought I'll post the link to that in the show notes as well. For anyone who's not familiar with F11 magazine, it's published out of New Zealand, comes out every month. It's a free PDF. I think there's an iPad version as well as a PDF version that you can grab.
And they do full translations to English as well.
Boom, boom. Really good magazine, and that's where Carl came across the link to Noel Kern's works.
Yeah.
So
it is a good magazine. Our good friend Mike Holman features in it regularly.
He does.
So,
And you know what? Definitely. It's crazy. I've downloaded every single edition that they've published, which is now like about 26 editions or something.
How many have you read?
About three.
Really? Two and a half more than I thought you were going to say. But isn't that the thing that we get access to all this stuff? So I've got 600 books on my iPad as an example.
Yeah, I actually think that's the curse of the modern era is access to too much information.
Absolutely, yeah. The plethora of stuff out there.
Yes. Yeah, crazy.
Now I got an interesting Facebook message from someone this week,
right?
Which I thought it was an email, it was a discussion. I'm not going to say who it was because I know that. Yeah, but
if it was an interesting Facebook message, that makes it unique in its own right.
It wasn't a post; it was a message.
Yeah,
it,
right.
It wasn't. It wasn't out there for the world.
Oh, okay.
That would have shocked everybody. The internet might have stopped. But it came along to my beach shoot, my horrendous beach shoot.
Oh, yeah. Your Arctic beach shoot, yeah.
The Arctic beach shoot, yeah. And he part of his message, he says, it was this, is I really didn't like either of the models, so pretty much decided early on it was going to be a technical learning night.
Wasn't that the point?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, this is more of a, and he's been to a whole bunch of stuff, so he doesn't, I'm not really going to be teaching him. I'm not necessarily going to be saying something that he probably hasn't heard before.
Right.
You still pick up bits and you still say, you know what I mean, as an overall thing. But I thought, this is somebody who wants to dabble in being a photographer. And this is exactly the situation that he should have said, I'm being challenged to produce great images of not beautiful people.
Yep.
In really tough conditions.
Yeah.
Not at very early on decided it was going to be, just learn technically. And what he said is he went home and deleted every image.
Are you serious?
Yeah, even though he had some good photos of the female model, he didn't like her look, so he just deleted them. Yeah, where to me, but he was happy with the night because of what he learned.
Right.
But to me, it just showed, and part of what he said was maybe, you know, I'm starting to get off my training wheels now and can go out there and start doing this stuff myself because, you know, I don't need this dynamic necessarily so much anymore.
I was going to say he needs to question his motivation for going to a photographic workshop. It just seems like,
well, so remember, my evening shoots aren't so much workshops as they are shoots.
Okay, right.
So I do workshops, and then I do shoots, which is where people have been to workshops and been taught.
Oh, okay.
The essentials, then come along for the shoots, which is where they put the skills they've learned to practice.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
So they're more practical evenings than they are workshops. I'm not saying they're explaining, you know, math formula for flash as an example at these events. They're just come along. You've already started to grasp the skills. Now let's put it into a practical application. So there's sort of an extension of the shooting part of the workshop.
Right, fair enough.
They're kind of fun and people come on, yeah. But the challenge is, as a photographer, you have to take photographs that you don't necessarily like taking.
Yeah.
You have to take photographs of people you don't necessarily like taking photos of.
Yeah.
You've got to take photographs in situations, in conditions that are horrendous, but be able to provide a quality body of work. Now,
definitely.
I hated the night. It was the hardest workshop in the 700 plus what I've done. It was the hardest event I've ever run.
Right.
I told you about the one after LA, didn't I? Did I tell you about the one at the beach shoot I did at LA?
No.
Last week? Well, I was comparing what was previously the worst workshop ever.
Oh, right.
And how this one surpassed it. It was the other one was I flew from Melbourne to Los Angeles.
Yeah, which is a 14-hour flight.
Yeah, and plus, yeah, 3 or 4 hours waiting around. So, yeah, 17, 18 hours. Got off the plane, jumped the bags at the hotel, went straight to the beach for the shoot.
Oh, wow.
Now, what it was supposed to be is bikini babes coming out of the beach.
Yeah.
Yeah, as you've seen, my shot's like that. And, yeah. And I said, look, we want some rocks on the, you know, some bit of rocks, so they can sort of be climbing out of those, and we'll be lighting with the flash. Well, we had three bikini models booked.
Right.
All three failed to show.
Oh.
Okay. So the owner of the store ended up getting his daughter, who was, you know, moderately okay.
Yeah.
And a friend of hers who was a football player, so a bloke rather than a girl,
right?
Who hadn't been training for a while,
oh, no,
to come along to help out. So, but great, in a pinch they helped out. Okay, so
yep.
But it was a fair degree of stress up to this point because people are already standing waiting around. But by standing, I mean several of them were on their Zimmer frames,
right, on the beach.
No, this is out in the car park. We then had to go down the steep bank down to the beach.
Oh,
and by beach, we really mean rocks with sea attached to it.
Right.
So these were massive boulders and just huge rocks, incredibly hard for even me to walk on, let alone someone with a Zimmer frame. So we've got a bunch of 70 to 80-year-old people trying to hobble across these rapidly diminishing light over these huge boulders by crashing ocean with models less than what after 17 odd hours of travel. It was a tough night.
Yeah, it sounds like
at least, yeah. This was worse. Just in the sheer scale of the wind and the light and the sand flying and the temperature and the models, because once again I had a model cancel that day. And so the guy who came along was someone that this other model had sort of pulled along.
Yeah.
And the other model I had, the bikini model, was my secondary model. So my main model cancelled. I'm stuck with a secondary model last minute. So it was a horrendous event.
Yeah.
But I got 3 or 4 great shots out of it.
Right.
Because that's what you have to do.
Yep.
And one shot, which I'm currently rebuilding all my my presentations, my workshop presentations to widescreen.
Oh,
and
okay. Yeah.
One of those shots features in the presentation. I only put the images I really like in the presentation.
Sure.
And one of them's even made it into that.
Cool.
You know? So in horrendous conditions, and that's why a couple of days later I got this message that, mate, you just so missed the point. Yeah, this is exactly the time you've got to challenge yourself to be good.
Yeah.
Not sit back and go, I don't really like the look of them. And go do a wedding and look at the things.
I was going to say, this guy's obviously not planning on being a wedding photographer.
So the last, the
last it's a crap day. I don't feel like shooting today.
So the last wedding I shot, the bride was 4'7", 350 pounds, had more facial hair than me, and the groom was nowhere near as good looking. So you know, you've got to. If you want to do this on a regular basis, or even potentially think about being involved in the industry, that's what you've got to do.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a really interesting thing. I didn't get upset over it because people take what they get out of events or they don't, and all I can do is put on the best you can put on, and some people will love you for it, some people will hate you for it.
Yep.
And he's still a good guy, and he loves coming. He's still going to come to more events. But it's that mindset that got me. I think you missed a really good opportunity to really try and push yourself.
Yeah.
Even at the end of the day, if your photos are still no good, that's okay. But you pushed yourself to try and produce.
Yeah.
And that's what you got to do. I was reading just before about you've got to fail as a photographer.
Yeah,
you've
for sure.
You've got to go out there. If you're not failing, you're not pushing yourself. And that would have been a great night to maybe fail, but at the same time, learn some, not be a technical learning, but be maybe a spiritual learning as such, or a humanitarian growth as a photographer. Because technically, what was there to learn? You probably already knew that, but mentally, very different. So psychologically, very different learning experience. So that was kind of, I enjoyed that brought up great topic of thought for me for the week. So
I
enjoyed that email. It didn't offend me, but I was a bit, that's not very, deleted all these photos. Yeah. sort of made me feel like I put on a crap event. But everyone else was saying how great it was. So stuff you. No. He knows I love him. If he listens, he knows I love him. That was interesting.
Now, did you see the story that came out today about Getty Images?
I did.
What were what was your thought on that?
Let's talk about it another time. We know what it is. The listeners don't. You want the listeners to know as well?
Yes.
For those that don't know, basically what Getty Images are saying is they're going to unlicense their entire image stock library, so you can cut and paste into any non-commercial website.
It's not cut and paste.
It's
embed.
Embed.
Yep.
Yeah, same thing. Embed.
It's not the same thing.
almost the same thing. You've got to embed their low-res image into your blog post or whatever it may be you're using it for.
Yeah. What I found interesting about it was that the guy from Getty that they spoke to, because they basically said, aren't you sort of, just letting the gates wide open to – massive piracy of all of your images. And he basically said, well, the thing is, it was already easy to do. And our images were all over the place anyway, because people could do this and that to already get access to the images. So we're just sort of legitimizing it. But, in the process, making it so that when people do embed their images in their, our images in their websites, there is at least a Getty Images credit on there.
Yeah, and they've got advertising built into it and stuff as well, and all that other kind of guff. So,
I thought it's an interesting take on, for the last 10 years, if not more, everything's, anti-piracy, anti-piracy, anti-piracy. Yeah. And I just thought this is a very interesting direction for a legitimate business to take, in terms of, with regards attitude to the use of their content, which they have traditionally charged for. I thought it was very interesting for them to now turn around and say, look, we know you're already doing this, so, we're just going to legitimize it.
Yeah, might as well just keep on doing it. It's kind of we can't beat them, so we might as well give them access.
But maybe there's a future avenue here for Adobe. We know Photoshop is the most pirated piece of software in history, so we'll give you a free ad-supported version.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe. Who knows?
The another an example of similar thing to that is I'm rebuilding all my presentations.
Yep.
And I've had, now as I rebuild anything, I always.
And you've got some Getty images in there?
No. Yeah, all the images are stolen. I don't take any of those photos. Whenever I'm rebuilding something like that, I sort of think, and I'm always amending them anyway, but this is a complete rebuild. Every image is different just about and so on. But I'm thinking about, okay, when I'm speaking, what stumbling blocks do I have and how can I visualize or put into the presentation visuals that will help people understand it better?
Yep.
So I said, what I want to say, I want to have more visual descriptions of aperture and shutter speed and more diagram type of stuff.
Yep.
Now I'm garbage at that sort of stuff. Now there's a million right click save image I could have done.
Yep.
Yeah. But I've just hired someone tonight on Freelancer to build them for me.
Nice.
Yeah. For almost no money. I mean, let's face it, I'm getting, I think, 12. New diagrams built up to my specifications.
Lovely.
For $54.
Wow.
You know, it's $4 an image I'm going to be using for years. You know, it's nothing.
Yep.
It doesn't, this whole thing about stealing images, it's kind of, it's just not worth the risk. It's just so little cost associated with, this 1 cent stock libraries for
people. Yeah.
Just go and do it legitimately. It'll take you 10 more minutes. I reckon it's more a time thing.
Yeah.
Then a
cost thing. Yep.
Yeah. Then I want to steal these images. No, it's, I can't be fagged spending 10 minutes to go and get it properly. I'll just right click. And I think that's a lot more to it. So maybe if they made the process simpler to access the images, you right click, it says, do you want to buy this image for $1? Click yes. That maybe makes a change as well,
Yeah.
I could have just revolutionized stock photography whilst I'm sorting socks. Yeah, I'm giving my full half attention, dude.
Excellent. I'm so glad to hear that.
Is that what that Wilson sock went to? I thought, it's just me. man's got to do his washing sometime.
That's right.
These kids don't give you a minute's break. So what else have you come across?
Well, Steve Peters also posted on the Facebook wall.
Steve Peters,
with
isn't
the a link from Frono's photo.
Just before you go on to that, can I just say something, knowing that Steve listens?
Yeah.
Steve, in this very public forum, I've been liking some of your images of late, dude.
Oh.
Because normally I say all his photos are crap. So, he's gonna not only hopefully take the praise as it's meant, but in this public forum, it validates all the abuse I've given him in the past.
Right.
No, good stuff. You are doing some interesting photos. So well done.
Excellent. Excellent.
So you were saying.
So Steve sent us a link from fronosphoto.com about a photographer who, based in Orlando, Florida, who decided to set up a crowdfunding project to buy his new D4S. And Frono's Photo had, some thoughts on that whole approach to doing business. Now, I will confess, I only saw the link today and I haven't had a chance to read what Fro thought about the whole thing, but my initial thoughts were, what a crock. Glenn, your take on it?
I'll say good on him.
Okay.
Personally, but I went to try and find the actual thing on the FundMe program.
Right.
And the page is no longer available.
So he must have closed the project.
So I couldn't see that. And the guy on the link to it was basically saying, look,
it's either that or he raised so much money he's gone out and bought 10 D4Ss.
Just the way he phrased it in his post and everything, probably didn't really do himself a service.
Yep.
But I look at it this way. So why I went to the post to see what he was offering for people who are donating.
Yeah.
So if this guy is quite a good photographer and he's offering, I don't know, say he's gone and done 100 limited edition prints of his photos, and you donate some money, he sends you a print. That's okay. You like the art, you get a piece of the art.
Sure.
You pay for it. Yeah. It's a different way of selling some of your work, effectively, isn't it?
Yep.
It's a new work avenue to sell via a Kickstarter type program.
Mm-hmm.
So if that was the premise, yeah, good on him. It's quite a unique way to find new customers and fund your camera gear at the same time.
Yeah.
But what I did read on the bit that was on the link website was you know, help me maintain my position as the number one photographer in Orlando. And so, well, if you're that good, dude, yeah, you should be able to maintain it yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
If you are the number one photographer, increase your prices and buy your own damn gear.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you are a student or a startup or whatever, and you say, well, you know, I've got some nice photos. I'm prepared to, once the money comes in, I'll put a portion of that money towards printing out some stuff and some nice stock and sending them to the people who've been nice
supportive.
Yep. Yeah, well, good on them.
Yeah, see, but to me, that's a completely different scenario. This is a working professional photographer. And as far as I'm concerned... You know, as far as I'm concerned, if you are a working professional in any field, it's up to you to supply your own goddamn tools to your job.
You know, it's not easy. I mean, the working photographer...
I'm going to set up a crowdfunding project because I want a new microphone, and in return, I'll give you some free podcasts.
Don't give away the podcast, dude. I told you. You know, I need the money every week to feed the kids. I was talking to a very good photographer on Saturday morning, just gone. And I mean, he's a good photographer. You know, he's done some great stuff in the past. And
okay.
Maybe getting a little bit jaded by the whole world of it these days. But he's basically said, oh, do you know any sales jobs that are gone? I said, how come? He goes, oh, yeah, you know, 25 years, I'm jack of it. You know, no one can make any money in this business anymore. You know, maybe I'm just not trying as hard as I used to. But, yeah, it's just getting to be too much sort of thing.
Right.
So he's basically given up the ghost as a photographer. And that's another, you know, good photographer leaving the industry.
Yeah.
It is very hard for a working photographer to survive these days.
Yep.
You've got to be a specialist. You've got to either have a great bank of clients who only work with you. But if you're the wedding photographer or the family portrait photographer or whatever, there's a tough market to be in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
A classic story, what Australia's richest photographer told me was one of his working photographers that worked for him was out doing a family portrait shoot with his family, got them all, you know, all fantastic, blah, blah, took them to this awesome location, did the shoot. The next week he's out there with another group of clients and there's the same family lined up wearing exactly the same clothes and she's got the camera on a tripod with a self-timer running and doing the same shots that the pro'd set up.
You're kidding.
And get this, these people were filthy rich.
The clients. Yeah, right.
Not, you know, go to this guy if you haven't got a few bucks in your pocket.
Yeah.
But yeah, they were decided, oh, we're just going to do this ourselves, you know.
Yeah, right.
Because it's all about the location, as we know. that's why I only ever cook my really good meals in really expensive kitchens. I find when I cook them in my own kitchen at home, it doesn't taste anywhere near as good. There's the thing. But yeah, that was a classic story. There's a very wealthy photographer. He's being undermined by his own customer base, thinking it's just about location and a camera.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a hard world to be in. So yeah, if you want to stay in business, you've got to maybe be a bit imaginative about how you can fund staying in business.
Well, you know? I think as Lorna said to me, you know, 18 months, 2 years ago, you know.
That'd be Lorna Andrikopoulos?
Yeah. In order to survive as a photographer, you have to be marketing yourself like a demon, quote unquote.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what it comes down to, you know.
Yeah.
Those that survive are the ones who are completely across every avenue of social media and who, you know, who know how to market themselves.
Yeah, but once again, if you're in any sort of normal family relationship, that takes a hell of a lot of time, is it?
Yeah,
I see a lot of people. You know, I trained a lot of women, and I see a lot of their marriages breaking up because of photography.
Really?
Yeah, all around the world. You know, their lives are, you know, all of a sudden they've got this new love in their life that isn't their husband.
Yep,
and they're not selling themselves for anywhere near. If I hear a little strain in my voice every now, I'm just bending down to pick up socks.
Right.
You think I'm joking about the socks, don't you? I've got a bag load of them here. Right. You know what it's like? You put stuff and you always get one sock spare. Well, this is the bag of 300 one socks. And, yeah, I've already got 1, 2, 3, like 12 pairs put back together, dude. I'm on a roll here. No, what was I saying? That's right. No, the weddings, marriages splitting up because they're spending all the time on the computer, doing all this editing, doing all this social marketing, doing all this meeting with clients, but they're not charging enough to warrant the time, and the husband has the jack, and goes off and finds someone who doesn't like photography.
Yeah, right.
And I see that all the time. It's an incredibly common occurrence. You know?
Yeah, right.
So, it's a very tough world to be in. And I think we said last week, you know, if you want to be a photographer, or I may not have said last week, if you want to be a photographer, you don't take up a job as a photographer. You take up a job running a business.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're running a business. You're not being a photographer. You're running a business. If you're not prepared to do accounting, marketing, advertising, networking, everything else, and occasionally take some photos.
Yep.
Yeah, that's the world of a photographer, not taking photos.
That is the world of a successful photographer today.
No, that's a world of a working photographer, successful right. or not. That's what you have to do.
Yep.
You shoot very rarely. You bust your buns trying to find clients the rest of the time.
Yeah. Your shooting is maybe 10% of your work.
Yeah, you are running a business.
Yeah.
And everything that running a business entails. That's meeting the tax man, paying your taxes, getting insurances done, all that stuff. Very rarely taking photos. And that's the thing. Most people go into photography to take photos.
Yeah.
I want to be a photographer to take photos. And that can have a fair toll on the people as well in the business, because it's not what they anticipated it was going to be. It's not all the out there shooting and having a great time taking photos. It's, you know, busting their buns trying to balance a book.
Yeah.
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 Anyway, here endeth the sermon. you know what I mean? It is a very tough life.
Mm.
It can be. Trust me. I mean, I love being involved in this industry. I mean, I hope my passion. I'm silly. I'm a bit stupid, but I have a lot of passion for what I do. You know, a lot of passion. I mean, at the zoo the other day, a lady came up to me and she recognized me, and I trained her a year or so ago. And she'd come to my workshop to learn how to take great photos of the baby that was coming.
Right.
And the baby turned out to be twins.
Wow.
And the twins were there with her, and they were both gorgeous.
Right.
And she says, the photos I've taken of these children, thanks to you. And she was, you know, she was pretty emotional about it. And it was, that's joy, you know.
Yeah.
That's for me. That's what it's all about, you know.
That's awesome.
But it's just a lovely little moment, and you're blessed that you can do that sort of stuff. So I love being in this industry, but there's no way would I be fooled into thinking it's for everybody. Or doesn't matter how, you could be the world's best photographer. Maybe you shouldn't be a photographer though, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Shouldn't be a working photographer.
Yep.
Like you, I mean, you love your photography.
Yeah.
You used to. You don't do it very often anymore, but you used to love your photography. You
know? Yeah.
But, yeah, should you do it as a living? I don't know.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Anyway, speaking of taking photos.
Yeah.
I came across an awesome app this week.
Yeah.
Well, I'm kind of lying, listeners. I came across this awesome app about 15 minutes before the podcast.
Well, that's this week.
that honesty Tourette's just keeps getting in my way, isn't it? But it's called the Artist's Viewfinder.
Right.
Mark II.
Okay.
Everything's Mark II.
Okay.
These days, yeah. But basically, it's an app that has like hundreds of different cameras built into it, as in the
profiles of cameras.
The profiles, that's the right word. Profiles of cameras,
yeah.
And hundreds of different lenses from medium format to all sorts of stuff. And basically, the app is designed. Let's say you're out hiking in the bush or whatever, looking for a great landscape to take. And you pull out your phone and you could say, well, I want to use this camera and maybe one of these three lenses. And you put the app up to the location you want to shoot, and it'll show you what each shot's going to look like with the different lenses you've got. It's got this little overlay on the screen.
Right.
So you can get a feel for composition, which different lenses are going to look like, what sort of distortion you get, all this sort of stuff you're going to see on the screen. And you can work your different exposures and everything else to get a feel for what it's going to look like.
Just playing devil's advocate here.
Yes.
I'm assuming that like every other app that you bring to this show, it's iOS only.
I think you're right. Yeah, it's all the good. Well, all photographers.
So my question is this. What's the widest angle that you can get on an iPhone camera?
It has an optional wide angle converter.
Right.
Which gives you effectively a 17mm viewpoint.
Right. So how's this app going to tell you what your 16mm fisheye is going to look like, or your 8mm fisheye?
It's not.
Right.
It's going to do everything from 470 lenses or something from 17 all the way through to 1,000.
Oh, okay.
It's not too bad. But right. Here's the cool thing, though.
Yeah.
When you've got the wide angle converter on,
yeah.
it removes distortion live in real time. The wow. barrel distortion you get from the wide angle, yeah. it converts it live so you can see what it's going to look like.
Wow.
That's pretty cool, isn't it?
That is cool.
It's like the last thing you want to do is pull all your gear out, which lands, there's dust and crud flying around everywhere. It's not a bad option, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And it also stores stuff like all your GPS data for where you are and all this other stuff. So you can yep. go home and then pull up all that data on your laptop
yep.
and bring up your overlays from this location. Maybe you're going out scouting for a future shoot.
Yep.
Yeah, and you'll be able to pull up all that information of where you were, what time you were there, how it's going to look through all different lenses and stuff. It's like a $25 app. I think it's the most expensive app in the world of Apple, just about.
Yeah, yeah right.
And there's nothing else over 29 cents or something. So it's an expensive app.
But so you didn't pay for it, did you?
Oh, I haven't even got it. I only found it 15 minutes before the show, dude. Right. And the time to hit them up for a freebie yet, but I'll be on to it, don't worry. Yeah, there's time in the week for that. I think if you do a lot of landscapes and stuff, maybe it's worthwhile having a bit of a gander at. It may not be for you, but it may be.
Yeah.
All we can do is introduce the cool stuff we find.
Absolutely.
And some of it will resonate, some it will go, oh, not another bloody app.
Well, the thing is, there's so many photographic apps that appear on the, you know, the there iOS, the iTunes store and on the Google and, market. So,
Well, I mean, it shows just how popular this stuff is.
Yeah.
Speaking of shooting with iPhones,
yeah.
I found on Flickr this week a guy who's shooting astrophotography with a telescope and his iPhone.
A telescope and an iPhone?
Yeah, and we're talking, he's doing stuff like, you know, solar flares on the sun. Yeah, the moons and rings of Jupiter, you know. Incredible shots of the moon. Yeah, great detailed shots of the craters on the moon and stuff. So I've got the link there for you. So
yeah, Andrew Symes.
That's him, yeah. Wow. And, you know, another one of these smart asses, just because he can, he does. But yeah, it's pretty cool. Once again, I just love. Yeah, I'm never going to do it. Yeah, I'm probably never ever going to do it. But I love there's people out there doing stuff.
Yeah,
and they're trying different stuff and pushing boundaries. And it's not everyone's cup of tea. But maybe I've never said this in the show before. But I love my astrology. You know,
right?
And yeah, you know, I love anything about the stars and the planets.
Yep.
I'm trying to be a smart ass about the astrology bit, versus mm-hmm. say it's called astronomy. You know?
Yes,
straight over the head. it's like every time you talk astronomy, everyone says astrology.
Yeah, you
know, does my head in, boy. For my entire life, I've been enamored with astronomy.
Yeah,
and in fact, whenever Halley's Comet came last,
86.
I was Australia's largest selling telescope salesperson for the year wow. in 1986, running in this particular camera store. I sold more telescopes than anybody else because I was one of the few people in the store who actually knew anything about it. You know, you go into stores and ask about telescopes, most people have got no idea.
Yep. Yeah,
I was in at Mr. Oakley's, getting Mr. Oakley's lens fixed in this camera store the other day. I had to go around and fix all their telescopes so they were pointing the right way. Nothing worse than having them point, having the actual telescopes on backwards on the mount. Right. Stuff. It does my OCD in like you wouldn't believe. So this guy, speaking of iPhones, he's out there shooting, doing astro stuff.
I've got to say, I'm just scrolling down the page and just looking at the thumbnail images. If these are done with an iPhone, that's pretty damn impressive.
Well, the good thing about Flickr is that the metadata comes up. So
right.
You can pull up all the metadata of what's been used. So you'll know it if it's done with it.
Unless he's of Saturn with the rings around it.
Yeah, because, of course, the telescope's doing all the hard lifting.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Good stuff. Yeah, I really thought that was smart arsy of him, and that sort of mixed both jealousy and joy, you know.
Yeah.
and speaking of what cameras people are using, someone with way too much time on their hands has gone through the World Press Photography Awards and analyzed which photographers are using what cameras in the world. So he's going to do a
graph. So he's ripped all the metadata.
Yeah, and he's got the percentage of all the photographers in the world and the World Press Awards, you know, who's using what camera brands.
And made a pie chart.
Yeah, exactly. Well, as you have to, of course.
Nice.
You
know?
But here's the thing. The mind-blowing thing about it, 5% of people are using Sony.
Thank you. Amazing. Actually, what does surprise me about that pie chart
is the disparity.
The disparity. Yeah. Between the two biggies.
Yep.
Like, I honestly expected that Canon and Nikon would have, well, I mean, what are the, what's there? There's 70, 86% of the market between those two.
Yep.
I expected that to be split fairly evenly.
Yeah.
And it's not.
Never has been.
Really?
Canon's always been the by far the more dominant of the two.
Wow.
Canon's a much, much, much bigger company than Nikon is.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so for the listeners, it's 58% Canon, 28% Nikon.
Yeah, that's just mind blowing.
7% Leica, 5% Sony, 2% Mamiya, which is
yeah.
a fairly high percentage, you'd have to say.
For Mamiya.
Oh, what you mean? Well, there's no Hasselblad, which is kind of
that's true.
A more, yeah, if you're looking at medium formats, you would think would have more traction.
Yeah.
But Mamiya's made. But you've also got to understand that.
But you know, Mamiya's probably a little more affordable.
Yeah, but look at the people who are using the stuff. Now, you're talking, the Leica's 7%, dude, and that stuff.
Yeah, that's true.
Darn expensive. You yeah. know? This is the World Press Photo Photographers Awards
yep.
that were analyzed. But, you know, they're only the ones who submit the photos to the competitions.
That's you know, true.
So that probably has a certain type of personality
mm-hmm.
attached to it as well. So
maybe the Blad shooters just couldn't be asked.
Exactly. All the guys are, you know, oh, I'll not do that. No. I don't do that. But Canon 1DX is the camera that's used by more than anybody else, pretty
yeah,
much.
Yeah, right.
Which is kind of understandable because if you're a sports photographer, as an example, it pretty much leads the pack. I mean, I know the new Nikon D4S is pretty amazing as well as far as you know, for sports guys, but at this point of time, that wasn't available. So the 1DX was like the camera of choice for most sports guys, and you know, a lot of this press stuff is that kind of gear does get put into. There's a lot of sports photos in the press these days, more than actual news photos, because no one shoots news photos anymore.
No, because the news organisations just rip off the crowdsourced images.
They just embed the stuff on Getty.
Yeah, that's right.
I always loved the newspaper. It's image source supplied. It doesn't actually say where it came. It's just supplied.
Yes. You know?
Yeah, so that was someone with far too much time on their hands and it gave us something to titter at for a few
yeah.
minutes. So we thank him.
Very
thank him
interesting.
For that. We always thank people giving us stuff to
definitely
look at.
So tell us about the pothole photos.
Yeah, so this is on DP Review or D Preview. Depends on
it's
which
DP
one
Review. Stop saying D Preview.
Well, is it Digital Preview?
No. It's DP. How do you know? You go to the website and you look at the way they have stylized the banner.
Really?
Yes.
Go on there.
Go and have a look, and you will see that it is DP Review. That's
it. Digital Photography Review. Look at that. Oh, look, it's blue for the DP, and Review is all in white.
Oh, my God. People, I think we've actually straightened him out.
You know, D-Preview had it on their website. What were we talking about? I've forgotten. Oh, pothole photography.
Potholes. Right?
These guys have gone around, kind of had enough that their city's full of potholes
yeah.
in their streets. So they said, well, right, there's nothing we can do about it. So how about we make them part of our photographic journey? And so they've gone out. They've gone out into the streets and converted all these potholes into photographic icons.
That's awesome.
And as they said, it was after their sudden collision with a canyon-sized crater with their car, they decided they'd turn frustration into a positive project. And there's some great stuff like this. They've got Alice in Wonderland pushing a rabbit down the pothole sort of thing.
Yep.
A guy pulling a fish out of a pothole. One of my favorites is a chef cooking donuts. Another guy with a big bowl of spaghetti meatballs. Yeah. It's someone's washing their dog. There's all sorts of cool stuff. So,
that's awesome.
That's kind of a fun one to have a look at.
Yep.
And the other one I came across was these guys who were dropping incredibly high luminance neon glow sticks down waterfalls.
Okay.
And doing long time exposure photos.
Yeah, oh, okay. Nighttime
photos, long exposure.
Oh, trippy.
And waterfalls of all sorts of weird colors. And of course, it also once it hits the water, the bottom of the waterfall, it goes off and follows the current.
Yeah.
It
always got
glowing lines and stuff as well.
So,
yeah, once again, somebody with a smart-ass idea and just done great stuff with it. You know, it's just brilliant. Yeah,
that is great.
Yeah, so some really cool stuff. So definitely go and have a look at those ones, guys, because it's it makes me want to go out and live in a country that's got rainfall and have a water. Cause the last waterfall I was at a couple of weeks ago, you know, had to watch out for the snakes in the middle of it. It's pretty darn dry.
Speaking of snakes, not exactly photographically a photographic story, but did you see the photo through the week of the snake up in northern Queensland eating the crocodile?
Yeah, it was only a small croc, it was only about 5 foot.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, it wasn't one of your big ones. The American listeners do, we've got to ham it up. Oh, this happens all the time, yeah. Oh. I was pulling the stroller out of the car the other day, bloody croc ate it. Yeah. Good thing the kid wasn't there at the time.
Yes.
that was a seriously big, and it was...
That's a hell of a brave snake.
But if you saw, there's a whole bunch of shots of the altercation they were having before the snake won.
So yeah, I didn't get to see them all.
Yeah, it was going for quite a while.
Yeah, right.
So that was pretty cool. So that was all the photo stuff I've seen this week that I thought was pretty cool. But I did go, and because no one's sending us quotes.
Oh, okay.
As I've come across quotes of interest this week, I've sort of been, cutting and pasting. But as best wherever I possibly could, I did get the names of who did the quotes. So there was some sort of attributing it. So here's some quotes for us to finish. And is there anything else you've got to say for tonight?
No, that's it.
I'll run through some quotes and we'll say our adieus.
Okay.
So nothing trumps good conscious decisions and discipline.
Absolutely.
So I'm not good at the first two, or the last one for that matter. Anyway, I have never taken a picture I've intended. They're always better or worse. But is that not true though? You think about it. We have this vision of what we want to shoot, and it's never that. It's either better than we expect or worse than we expect. It's never exactly what we expect it to be.
Do you feel that? Probably. Not far from the mark.
I feel that all the time. Oh, that came out better than I thought. I thought it was so much better. That's my life. How can I fix this in Photoshop? If you want to be a better photographer, stand in front of more interesting stuff.
Nice.
that's really good. Here's an Ansel Adams one. There are no rules for good photographs. There are only good photographs.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what I'm really, really focusing on this year is getting out of the compositional guide rules and all that sort of stuff. Try and break myself out of the compositional habits I'm in.
Right.
By trying to have no habits, no compositional rules to my photos.
Wow.
It's art. There shouldn't be any rules.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was really good. There are no rules for good photos.
Yep.
And only good photographs. If it's a good photograph, it's a good photograph.
Yeah, whether it follows the rules or not. That's absolutely true.
Yeah, so that was good. So if it's good enough for Ansel, it's good enough for me. You know, what was this one saying? I always thought good photos were like good jokes. If you have to explain it, it just isn't good.
Yeah. Nice.
Mind you, that is the proviso. That works in every situation I know, except when talking to my mother.
Oh, okay.
You have to explain both the good and the bad photos of that lady. No idea.
Right.
12 significant photos in any one year is a good crop, said Ansel Adams.
Yeah, right.
We beat ourselves up. We're trying to get all these great photos, you know.
Yeah.
How many great photos in a year do you need?
Yeah.
This is a bit airy-fairy, but we'll go for it anyway. You don't make a photograph just with a camera. You bring to the act of photography all the pictures you've ever seen, the books you've ever read, the music you've listened to, and the people you've loved. Ansel Adams.
Yeah, okay.
But which basically means you're bringing your personality to it. And so therefore, that's why if you stand next to someone else, they shoot differently because they are a different person than you, so they see it slightly differently. So
sure.
You'll succinct it to less air, less flowery and just, yeah. Nah, you see different than I do, dude. Yeah, that's why. Get you. All right. I love this one. There are no bad pictures. That's just how your face looks sometimes. Abraham Lincoln. And I love that.
Nice. Nice.
Well, why is it when I have my photo taken, I always look bad? Well,
newsflash.
Bad photos. Your face actually looks that way. I love that. And this is something I'm partially believing. When you photograph people in color, you photograph their clothes. When you photograph people in black and white, you photograph their souls. Now, it's a little simplistic. Now, I've been doing an exercise with people at workshops lately where I'm showing a same image and in color in black and white. One of my shots from India of this woman wearing this incredibly bright, colorful sari.
Right.
And also the same shot of her in black and white. I also, I show the first photo first and say, now, what do you see? And
so hang on, which one do you show first?
I show the color one first. Right. So what's the first thing you see? And say, oh, look at that beautiful color.
Yep.
And then I show the black and white. So what's the first thing you see? Look at those eyes.
Yep.
This color distraction.
Yeah.
But then to confuse matters, I pull another photograph up. I've got another girl wearing a sari or a scarf, but the color of the scarf really matches her skin tones really well.
Yep.
So there's not that jarring conflict of color.
Yep.
And let's see her face. So yes, color, if it's really opposing colors or really sort of counteracts the rest of the tones in the image, it can be a distraction. But if it's complementary, it can be an addition, or you see past it or whatever. So it definitely, I would suggest we always look at our photographs in both color and black and white and see which one, especially of people, and see which one has the most impact.
Yeah.
But I've been a loved photographing people in black and white, and I always shoot in black and white when I shoot people. But just of late, I've started wanting to shoot them in color. So, you know, it's amazing how your mind always, you know, keeps shifting. But, yeah, definitely color can be a big distraction.
Yep.
Just hit that one's only good. Have a quick read of that. No, that's just crap. Susan, what were you thinking when you wrote that?
the one from Richard Animal?
I'll do this one. All photographs are memento mori. To take a photograph is to participate in another person, thing or things, mortality, vulnerability, mutability. Precisely by slicing out this moment and freezing it, all photographs testify to time's...
Shut up. What?
Yes.
What you was know, that?
You know you need to get your word count up when you're writing that.
I didn't even want to hear the end of it. It was just going on too long.
I'm 1,000 words short.
Christ. I read War and Peace while you were reading that out. but did you see the one that Susan Menace posted on the Facebook page?
Do
tell. It was a Richard Annable quote.
Oh, yeah.
When I hold the camera to my eye, the noise stops.
Well, his noise, he stops talking. Is that what he's saying? That's his interpretation.
Maybe that's what he meant. He can't talk and shoot at the same time.
It's like B.B. King. Can't play the guitar and sing at the same time.
Okay.
So you never notice. He sings, then he plays.
Right.
Then he sings, then he plays. Sings, play. Doesn't do the two at the same time.
Right. Interesting.
Can't, apparently. Yeah, so maybe it's the same with Richard. He can't shoot and talk at the same time. You have to let us know, Richard, see if that's actually true. Or was it just the voices in my head saying, polish the gun, polish the gun. One of the two. Photographs force us to see people before their future weighed them down.
What?
Which is probably, if it's of a young person, if they're 90 when you shoot them, there's not a lot of future to be waiting. The future is bright. They better wear shades. Yeah. Yes. Of course, the two last ones. Final one from Ansel. There's nothing worse than a sharp image of a fuzzy concept. And that's a great one.
Yeah.
Have an idea of what you want to be shooting. But this is definitely my favorite of all of them.
Yeah.
And it's long, so you have to persevere. Yeah, don't War and Peace on me, dude.
Right.
Is a picture really worth 1,000 words? What 1,000 words? 1,000 words from a lunatic or 1,000 words from Nietzsche? Actually, Nietzsche was a lunatic, but you see my point. What about 1,000 words from a rambler versus 500 words from Mark Twain? He could say the same thing quicker and with more force than almost any other writer. 1,000 words from Ginsberg are not even 1,000 one worth one from Wilde. It's wild to declare the equivalency of any picture with an army of 1,000 words. Words from a writer like Wordsworth make you appreciate what words are worth.
Oh, nice.
And it's from a guy called Jared Kintz from his book, and I loved it because of the title of the book, This is the Best Book I've Ever Written, and it still sucks. I have to go find that book. So yeah, and then it's a picture's worth 1,000 words. Well, who's 1,000? Because 1,000 of mine is like 15 of yours. So I don't let you get many in. But that was pretty cool. That was some cool quotes for the week anyway. So
awesome.
That's it for me.
Excellent. All right, mate.
I'm training 23 people over the next 2 days.
So wow.
I got me work cut out for me, so I need to get my beauty rest.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah, so I'll see you in about 6.5 years. We'll see if it's helped any.
All right, mate. Well, you have a good week.
Thank you.
We'll talk to you next week.
Doodle bop.
See you, mate.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Shutterzing, another audio2you.com quality podcast. For previous episodes, check out shutterzingpodcast.com or search the iTunes Music Store. For questions, comments, and feedback, email thevoice@shutterzingpodcast.com.